Live from Burbank, California, gateway to Glendale, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, winner of the Stockton State Hospital International Comedy Competition, Mark Maron.
How'd you find out about that, man? Six past the hour, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, and you lingering Clippers fans. Man, I'm still wearing my Clippers jersey, and we're naked in here. I swear to God, we're looking at art. I was wrong about Gustave Courbet was a French painter. And let me tell you something. Gustave Courbet's Origin of the World is something to be seen, my friends. This is the way it used to be back before they shaved him. You understand? That's all I'm going to say. But moving on, Jim.
Yeah,
in just a second, we're going to be talking to comedian Jimmy Dore. We've got a lot of things going on tonight. It's a very exciting night. Live from the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. We'll talk to the filmmakers behind The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. We'll also be talking to a cop. Joe Broadhurst is coming in. He's a decorated police officer, and he's also an accomplished poet. Looking forward to that. Morton Mortensen will be there. But right now, let's just get into this. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. After more political outbursts by Saddam Hussein during today's testimony, the judge presiding over the ex-dictator's trial has closed the courtroom to the public and the media. Saddam angrily called on Iraqis to unite and fight the occupying forces and then get out of his houses and stop touching his stuff. Documents confirm that the Bush administration has rewritten security clearance rules to make it more difficult for gays and lesbians to receive clearances, with good reason. I mean, come on, remember the time the gays outed a deep cover CIA operative? Remember that? Or how about the time the gays tried to let a company that funded terrorist groups run the ports? All right. A Japanese research team has created a robot that will help care for the country's growing number of elderly. The robot is specially designed to sit for long hours and listen to repetitive stories about how that place on the corner didn't used to be there. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. Thank you very much. Jimmy Dore knows how to laugh at a joke. Isn't that right? Jimmy Dore here is here in the studio. You might know him from his many appearances on
the Late Late Show on CBS, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and the Half Hour Comedy Central
there
special.
You go. Or you might know him from seeing him live at Poppin' Politics at the UCB Theater. That's a monthly show, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, I do it the second Thursday of every month.
So here's a good question for you. You know, we were talking about this in our special pre-show that we had tonight about this woman, this Linda LaRocca, who was apparently, according to her, she's suing her ex-employer for firing her because she had an Air America bumper, or a Progressive Talker, just the KLSD bumper sticker on her car. And she was doing some business with her boss in a parking lot at a grocery store. I don't know what the hell kind of business that was, but I'm going to take her word for it. And apparently her boss said that Al Franken left-wing radical radio station, you could be a member of Al-Qaeda, you're fired. Let's go with what she's saying, because I've had this experience. I know what it's like to be judged for political views, and certainly with the war, it's happening all over culture right now. More people are against the president. His poll ratings, I'm sure you know, are about
37%.
No, 33 today.
Oh, really?
In a Pew poll, he's down to 33, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
And the Democrats still can't get on the Russ Feingold bill to censure him for illegally wiretapping.
That's right. I think five of them did. I think Barbara Boxer's on, Harkin's on. I think John Kerry's going to jump on.
Wow, bold. Just,
yeah, right? After 2 days,
bold.
after Feingold gets out there and says, you bastards, don't you understand? They're down, and this is our turn to take this issue by the horns here.
No, talking about getting judged, the reason I got into comedy is because I like to make fun of authority.
Absolutely.
And I was doing some George Bush jokes in Houston once because I'm brilliant. And I got my favorite heckle I ever got in my whole career. This guy, and this is a quote, this guy yells at me, he's protecting your freedom of speech, now shut the hell up, buddy.
That is a good one.
I was caught in a riddle.
That's a good one.
Very clever, heckler. And it's, I'm not even, and the guy got right in my face, and I didn't even know people still said this, but he goes, hey, it's America, love it or leave it.
Unbelievable. I had a similar situation happen. You know, Houston's an interesting place, because when you do comedy in Houston, they have a type of Bush hater there that goes way further back than most of us, because
right.
The people that hate Bush hated him when he was governor.
For personal reasons.
So they really, yeah, right. That guy stole my blow. But
right.
But it's interesting. But I got a similar thing. You know, not too long after 9/11, I was doing comedy in New York, and I was talking about the president. I was talking about the war, and someone just stood up and literally said, "Well, why don't you go over there and live with them?" Why? And I said, "Where?" And he goes, "Afghanistan." I'm like, "Well, they wouldn't even get my jokes there." But you know, and he turned out to be a Marine, and he was bitter because now he had no idea when he was coming home. But that sentiment, it's true. And as you said before we got on the show today, it's not something that we've really that I've heard in my lifetime, because I know it was there in the '60s around Vietnam.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's come back around. And the weird thing is, like, people say to me, "Well, this is the same guy," he said to me, "because why are you making fun of George Bush?" And I said, "Because I like to make fun of authority." He goes, "Well, why don't you make fun of the Democrats?" "Because I like to make fun of authority."
Yeah, they're not really in the driver's seat right
they're
now.
They're not very good at what they do.
Yeah, who, the Democrats?
The Democrats. They're not. They couldn't even beat George Bush twice.
Well, I mean, that's right. And I think one of the problems is, aside from not having a collective vision or really honoring democratic principles, is that you have a certain number of them, and you know who they are, Al Lieberman. You know who they are. You know, the ones who...
were Republicans and Democrats,
right?
Clothing?
They call themselves moderates, but really right. they don't honor any of it. Why am I spacing his name?
Joe Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman. I said, yes. Al, and it was like bothering me. I'm like, where did that come from? And I'm looking at Al Franken's name, but Joe Lieberman, even Hillary Clinton a little bit, but Clinton's a little different.
Well, you know, even with it's very, you know, and I don't like to throw the term around loosely, but even with Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. you know, he was very popular to the common man. And what he really was a tool of corporations and protected the moneyed interests while he tried to break into the working man's unions. And you know what they say, when fascism comes to America, it will look like anti-fascism. And you know what I say?
What?
What does fascism mean? Because I've been hearing it a lot lately.
Apparently it was popular in the 30s.
Yes. Yeah. I actually didn't. I heard people saying that. I'm like, well, what does that mean?
It's a line of clothing, a very aggressive line of clothing.
Yeah, for fascists by fascists.
So now look, you know,
it's FFFF.
Exactly. So now let's talk about this ports deal. It seems that that the Dubai, the DP, the Dubai, the Dubai owned company, I'm stuttering all over the place, DP World, has agreed to let an American company do this. They're going to do it within 4 to 6 months. They're going to sell off the interest in the ports to an American company. It might be the Carlyle Group, which is an equity mm-hmm. investment. I guess, I don't know what you would call it, cooperative, mm-hmm. that has about $8 billion of Dubai's money anyways, and it involves James Baker and it involves Bush. So mm-hmm. they might just funnel that money into a company that is a front company for a Dubai company, and maybe yes. they're just hoping we'll all get bored of that. Thinking about this, what do you make of the whole thing?
Well, I'm glad that Dubai pulled out, so because now the ports are all secure.
Yeah, don't you feel
Everything's
better?
Everything's fantastic.
Apparently they asked comedians to do it, so I've got to shift it at one. I go down to the port in Long Beach.
Carrot Top has the equipment.
Yeah,
he can really monitor that stuff.
Yeah, he does. He's got I think he's got a plunger that can actually see into those cargo crates.
Yes,
yeah.
And then he can scare any terrorists away with
his red hair.
Yes,
yeah, he's gotten a little scary looking now.
People have emailed me pictures of him nude.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the weird thing about Carrot Top is now he's getting older. He's got that weird hair, and
he's doing the Joe Piscopo thing.
Right, he's all buff and ripped, and it's mm-hmm. it's like seeing Ronald McDonald on steroids.
Yes,
it's like strange.
Oh, that's
man.
Exactly what it's like.
He was frightening looking to begin with, and his act was always a little frightening. But you know, he played the happy moron. There has to be a happy moron around.
Yes,
and look what I have. It's a hat, but no, it's not. It's a toilet. But the last time I saw him, I was like, oh, my God, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't say it to him, but you got to stop doing whatever you're doing because you look freakish.
You got to stop doing.
And I wasn't talking about his act.
Yeah, you know? No, he's ripped. Yeah. He's actually ripped now. But getting back to the ports and the whole issue mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't know if you know how much you know about me, Mark, but I'm the kind of guy who can get into an argument over the bankruptcy reform bill at a barbecue and just clear the place. I did that this last past summer.
Don't you understand? It's just making the bankruptcy courts collection agencies for the credit card companies. You're that guy?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Oh, good.
And
yeah.
I got into it with an L.A. cop.
Oh, yeah? And what happened?
Well, first of all, just let me say, the way I describe it is they say at any given time 40 to 50 million Americans don't have health coverage,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people get sick, and then they can't pay their medical bills. And, in fact, they did a study. Half of all personal bankruptcies can be attributed to an illness. So the Congress and the president got together, and they decided to make it harder to declare bankruptcy.
Sure.
So that ought to fix that.
That's right. Go ahead and die, you sick bastards.
That's how, and that's what the day I stopped being a Democrat.
Right.
Because they signed on to that bill, too. I mean, it's really the saying of the Republicans and Republican light. It's not just a saying. It's for real, you know. And
they're all playing in the same pool. Joe Biden is bought and owned by the credit card industry out there in Delaware.
Yeah. And so now people who get sick, instead of giving them health coverage, we make sure that we can track you down until you're dead,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll have to pay. And people go, you know, we have the best. Why is it that the Canadians always come here when they're sick? I don't know about you, but I get sick and tired of tripping over Canadians when I go to Cedars-Sinai.
You. They're lining up outside like they do for the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, damn Canadians. I can't even get in line at the Rite Aid because there's so many Canadians.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
We had to throw some out today.
Is that the biggest bogus argument you've ever heard about healthcare? Look, Canadians are coming. No, they're not.
Their system doesn't even work either.
Yes, it does.
It works well enough.
It works. First of all, you're not going to go broke if you get sick.
You got people in this country that are afraid to go to the emergency room,
yes,
because they're going to have to pay money. They'd rather sit at home, and that's what it exacerbates health situations when you're sitting there going, I don't want to go to the doctor yet. Now, I think anybody would do that out of fear, but you cross a line to where you know that, like, this thing, I'm not supposed to have a leg here. You know when something's growing out of you that isn't supposed to be growing out of you, and you might want to go see a doctor, but you're like, I'll treat it with something. We had a friend that did that, and he died.
Really?
Yeah, we knew a guy who had a medical problem that he refused to go to the doctor for because he didn't have health coverage when he should have. And because of that, it exacerbated a condition, a pre-existing condition. He died.
Well, that's...
Follow that, sucker!
Well, that is funny. That is pretty... And John Lennon was killed. Let's do some comedy.
Yeah, how about that? Man, I think I got bird flu and mad cow at the same time. Let's get into the funny stuff. So, but there is, what things are most bothering you right now? Are you concerned about Iran, my friend?
I'm concerned about our reaction to Iran. I saw John Bolton today say that Iran is 9/11 with nuclear weapons. And it's like the scare tactics never stop. They're never going to end. And, you know, it's Bush screwed up with India. It's like you rewarded India.
Mm-hmm.
And now so the hardliners in Iran are going to be even harder lined, right? I mean, is there a foreign policy that they cannot screw up, this administration?
Oh, no. They want to create complete chaos and then just, get their companies to rebuild things. We stay with us for a minute,
yes,
Jimmy?
Yes, certainly.
We're talking to Jimmy Dore. He is a comedian. You can see him at the UCB Theater monthly at Poppin' Politics, which is a show. You look for him on Comedy Central.
Hey, they can see. Can I say where they can see a preview of the show if
sure.
they want? It's at MySpace/Poppin' Politics Show.
There you go. We'll be back with him in just a second. It is 19 past the hour.
Coming up next, we're going to laugh at dead people. That's Mort Mortensen's Weekly Remembrance. Now back to a man who just had a massive oil spill on his couch, Mark Maron.
Wait, what? Did you see that?
I heard it in the news.
All right.
Google News.
All right. We're talking to Jimmy Dore, comedian / commentator. You can go see his stuff at myspace.com/poppinpoliticsshow. We've linked it on the website at markmaron.com, MarcMaron. In just a little while, we're going to be talking to a couple of filmmakers out there at South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. We're going to talk to the filmmakers behind The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. That'll be happening in a few minutes. Mort Mortensen's going to be here in a few minutes. But right now, you guys are talking about this show, Boston Legal. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I never watch it, but I've heard several people mention last night's episode today.
James Spader gave a very moving soliloquy in a courtroom scene. His assistant didn't pay her taxes to protest what the government has been doing, from the weapons of mass destruction to Abu Ghraib to the spying, and so he was defending her as making a statement, and so he gave this long speech about how when the weapons of mass destruction proved to be untrue, I thought there would be marches. There weren't. When we were torturing people at Abu Ghraib, I thought the college campuses would rise up. They didn't even notice. When they're spying on me and you, I thought for sure now nothing. And he gave this long, and it was just like so right. And so, you know, James Fairbairn's amazing. And it gave me chills, and it just made me want to come on your show and talk about it.
Well, you know what's interesting in thinking about that and hearing that response and in knowing that that exists? I think that people are so accessorized, and they've completely accessorized their narcissism to a point where they literally do not think that this stuff has an effect on them. Like college kids, do you know how long it takes? That's nice. That's a very nice choice on the cell phone there, Jimmy. Is that your cell phone?
Let me see.
Oh, yes, it is.
That's sweet. You know, it's something very... See, that's exactly it. You took time to find that ring.
Right when you're saying that.
Right. There are college kids sitting there programming their iPod, trying to figure out how they can TiVo something, getting on the blog. Is that there is so much stuff that encourages us to be self-centered, that we are the emperors of these small technological universes that just don't include political action, unless you happen to be one of those type of bloggers or what have you. But I think by and large, the culture at large is just completely self-centered, and you have to break through.
We're being distracted during an Armageddon is what's happening.
But so effectively distracted, it's profound.
Yes.
That the levels of distraction are multifaceted, multilayered, and many, more than any ever time.
Do you have a BlackBerry?
Before.
Do you have a BlackBerry?
I don't.
I don't either.
I'm avoiding it because I can't handle the texting. Look, I've got, you know, after I slowly started to realize as I got older, it's like, look, I don't have that many songs and I don't want to get that many more. And you know what? Three people call me. So now I have one of these old phones that doesn't take, I have to go through six steps to get a text message. And every time I've done it, it's the same guy and he's just saying, dude, call me. All right. And I know that's how it starts. That's the virus that infects you with the need to get a BlackBerry, but I haven't wanted to do it.
Yeah,
I don't want to do it.
No, I'm resisting. I'm resisting. I was in a meeting today, and a guy was talking to me the whole time, just looking at his BlackBerry, and and then to see someone answer one. Have you seen that? Like, just put it right to their head, like you're putting a little typewriter.
Right.
Up?
So you enter this in the conversation. They're looking at their BlackBerry. They put it to their head, and you're like, Abu Ghraib, how come we're not doing something? You know,
yes.
Unless you're, working for the neocon death cult and you're like, we're trying to make it go away.
Yeah, right. We're trying to make people stop talking about it.
Exactly.
We're getting the pictures off the internet and, yeah.
The best moment I ever had with a BlackBerry is I'm sitting there with my agent and my manager. Okay. My manager is on his BlackBerry. My agent takes a call on his and he says, I'm sorry, but, you know, he was doing it. And then my manager looks up and says, I'm not on the BlackBerry. I'm playing a game. And I'm like, oh, great. So the meeting's really going well. Like, that, like somehow or another, like,
that's,
oh, that's good that
that's
we're having
okay,
a conversation about my future and you're involved in a game.
That's a checkmate.
Yeah. So, Jimmy, I had no idea that you had been doing comedy as long as you have. How long have you? Because I went to find you, and I realized that we've probably been doing it. How long have you been doing it?
My first open mic was in 1989.
Okay.
And I started in Chicago, which was a very good place to start comedy because you can get a lot of stage time. And as you know, that's the only thing that makes you better.
Absolutely. I started in, my first open mic was like 84. So you're going to be in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I'll be in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the Main Street Comedy Club. And it's a great time out there. It actually is a very progressive kind of little community.
I love Ann Arbor.
And they have the 420 every year. Everybody has the big pot smoke thing and...
The pot smoke thing. That was so funny that you're like, we were talking about somebody out there, and you're like, he's cool. He's older and he smokes pot. He's cool. And I'm like, that's exactly what cool means. If you look up cool, anyone older who smokes pot definitely is one of the definitions of cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, I used to be a much angrier young man when I started comedy. And now when people are like, yeah, Jimmy's really mellow. Yeah, I started smoking pot when I turned 32.
Oh,
yeah, kind of takes the edge off.
I'm off all of them. Now I just, you know, I just thrive on the resentment and anger and then hate myself for doing it. Well, it's great for you to stop by. I know you got to catch a red eye.
Thank you for having me in. It was a blast.
Why don't we do it again soon?
Love to.
All right, Jimmy Dore, comedian, commentator, off to Ann Arbor. We'll be back with Mort Morton. Stay with us. It's 30 past or so.
Ripped from the Deadlines, Mort Mortensen's Weekly Remembrance, next.
And now back to a man who absorbs light and stores it as chemical energy in his chloroplasts, Mark Maron.
Yeah, I do that. Hey, folks, if you've been listening for a while, you're just tuning in, there's a lot of things we've been talking about. We've been talking about discrimination based on your progressive views, referring to a woman... Linda LaRocca, I believe her name is, in San Diego, who was fired from her job because her boss saw her progressive talk, her Air America bumper sticker, KLSD bumper sticker, and said, that Al Franken left-wing radical radio station, you might be a member of Al-Qaeda, you're fired. Has this ever happened to you? We've also been engaging in the presence of the camera obscura in Flemish painting as to whether or not that indicates that people like Van Eyck or perhaps Vermeer were working from reproductions as opposed to reality. Jim says, no, it does not diminish your work at all. I say it's not a matter of diminishment. It's whether they or not it, that indicates that they were indeed utilizing the reproductive technology of a camera at that point in time. It's really a dating mechanism. You can pipe in on that because that's all over the news today. Also, we've got one reaction here on the blog about discrimination, progressive discrimination. I work at a TV station, and the entire news staff got a memo saying that political buttons, bumper stickers, and lawn signs at their homes were forbidden. That's from Jerogo on the blog. If you want to pipe in on this one, 877-520-1150, these are important issues. Especially that camera obscura thing is ridiculous, and I know a lot of people are upset about that today, especially here in Los Angeles. Every week, we take this time to reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance.
Oh,
wow. You okay, buddy?
Yeah.
All right, man.
Oh. Helen Petrauskas, top safety executive at Ford Motors. Helen Petrauskas, a controversial safety executive at Ford Motors, reportedly died of frustration last week when the fuel tank on the Ford ambulance she was riding in caught fire after the tire on the Explorer she was driving blew up while suddenly leaping from park to reverse and stalling on the left turn and then exploding.
Man. Yeah.
More than anyone, Petrauskas was responsible for putting airbags in cars in 1990. Tragically, 20 years after they could have prevented the injury that inspired VH1's Behind the Music with Leif Garrett. Petrauskas was born 61 years ago in Ukraine, where today things are so bad, airbags are often used as food or sold into prostitution.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's rough.
It is rough there.
Yeah.
She was just 3 days old when her family fled the country in a horse-drawn wagon. The safest vehicle she'd ever ride in. She worked for Ford. Oh, man.
You need a Kleenex?
Yeah, thanks, man.
It sounds like you're a little stuffed up.
Well, you never ask. Yeah. You just moved in a new place, a lot of paint.
Oh, yeah. You got a paint allergy.
Oh, yeah, fumes.
Oh, what's your... Oh. That Kleenex made out of a book?
Yeah.
You all right?
Oh.
I don't think that's going to absorb that. Why don't you throw that away now?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay,
thanks.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
The deceased requested her body be exploded at 200 miles an hour into the face of a drunken teenage driver with braces.
Oh, we're going to hell.
Yeah.
It's okay. There isn't a hell. What else you got?
Here we go.
All right.
Slobodan Milosevic, successful banker.
I heard of that guy.
Former Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic died last week of a prescription drug reaction in his prison cell, apparently after finding David Crosby's old stash.
Because Crosby still has a natch for probably there at some point.
We just lost him as a guest.
Crosby's been everywhere.
He's a funny guy. He's got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You all right?
And he's got a great liver.
Yeah. This third one, isn't it? Second?
Who's counting after the second?
Yeah. Party, party, party.
A ruthless advocate of bloodthirsty nationalism, Milosevic unleashed 10 years of ethnic cleansing that recast the map of Europe and helped inspire the most successful parts of the Wolfowitz Doctrine. That was pretty political.
That was really political for Mort.
I don't know.
I guess that paint fumes is really doing something for you, huh?
Yeah, you know, you never move into a new apartment when just 2 days after it was painted. It's very bad for your nose.
Oh, but apparently it provokes political thought.
Well, you got to, you know, do something while you're tripping out.
Yeah.
As a youth, Milosevic was a pudgy loner with few friends. Mm. But as the years passed, he gradually matured into a pudgy loner with few friends. In 1962, while he was in college, his domineering father committed suicide by shooting himself, and his mother hanged herself 11 years later.
Wow.
It's probably the worst reaction to mid-semester grades ever.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Milosevic requested his remains be divided amongst his family in Moscow and his scrotum put back in the Balkans. The Balkans.
The Balkans.
throw it over
the ball cans. I'll get it.
I was just trying to have a little whimsy.
What's
it's a very serious subject.
Blow your damn nose again.
Okay.
You just did that in your hand. Might as well just put a finger over one nostril and lob it into the garbage can.
We don't have the good old America, Air America, things to blow nose in. This has been the Weekly Remembrance. Till next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Yeah. I was a pudgy loner.
Really?
Yeah, with not many friends.
Did you strangle cats?
No, I would never strangle cats. Hey, we got a call. Oh, did he hang up? There was somebody going to pipe in on the Flemish painting issue.
Oh, for God's sakes, how long on the Flemish painting? I think the whole premise of your statement is just kind of discombobulated.
Look, I'm not gonna be left in the lurch on this issue. All right,
it a reproduction, but it's not even a reproduction that they're working from. It's a light painting. It's a figure light on a wall.
Anything that comes through a lens and projects onto something else in that moment, that is a reproduction. This, the people are arguing about this in Arkansas. They're arguing about it in Virginia. They're arguing about it in Portland. It's all over the damn country today. And it's unbelievable that we can't get closure on this because, not unlike any other, major political issue, sometimes it's spun. Sometimes it's interpreted differently by other people. But damn it, I'm going to get to the bottom of it. And I wish some people would help out and call up.
This is just like the pyramid thing. People got to explain the pyramids. Oh, aliens did it. No, aliens did not build the pyramids. The Egyptians built the pyramids. And Vermeer actually did his own paintings. He didn't work from a reproduction.
And Gustave Courbet, the French painter, 1866, did a painting called The Origin of the World after photography. And it's clear to me that that might have been taken from a photograph.
I'm sure he worked from a photograph.
It looks like I know that.
Anytime a painter puts paint down on a canvas, it is his own. It's not the photograph anymore. It's not the camera obscura anymore.
It's an issue of when the technology was introduced and when it was begun being used and when we can officially say that reproductive technology, because I don't believe that, I think photography was introduced in 1837. All right. Now we're going back to the Flemish painters. What years were those, smart man? Long before that. So the
1600s.
Exactly. So the real idea is, when do we start saying that photographic technology was being used in the arts? Reproductive technology is being used in the arts. When do we say that?
Okay, well, I think the argument by the Smithsonian article was this, that Vermeer could not have painted his paintings without the camera.
That is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And it's
I am outraged.
Now you're mocking me.
I cannot go to sleep at night thinking that the Smithsonian Institution would say that about Vermeer. That's not where I'm coming from, Jim, and maybe you've misinterpreted what I'm saying.
You know, a lot of people are saying that. He couldn't have done it without a camera obscura, which is BS.
Damn them. Damn them spinning it like that. That is ridiculous.
How many Vermeers do you have in your hallway?
I don't have any Vermeers in my hallway, Jim. Look at that. Gustave Courbet, The Origin of the World.
Will you stop looking at porn get back to the
subject?
How
can you call that porn? Can you call that porn? That's art.
It's a close-up of a woman's...
Right, back in the old days, before they decided to do racing stripes and stuff. I love that. All right, look, this has gone crazy. All we wanted to do was get to some stories about people who have had experiences where they were judged for being a progressive, and now we're deep into an unresolvable issue that goes back and forth, unlike the abortion issue with some people. This Flemish painter and the use of the camera obscura thing is out of hand.
You know, we did get a story about that from right outside in the hallway.
Uh-huh.
Our Paul, the call screener,
Brendan,
the gentle giant, he mentioned that the general manager of this station, KTLK, his wife was swerved off the road with a bumper sticker on her car of Air America.
Wow. Wait, yeah. I mean, what the hell are people thinking? Yeah, I mean, this is what people should be talking about. This is the way people should be thinking. It's the same thing as when these Republicans start saying things about Russ Feingold, that he's aiding the terrorists by showing them that we're having a debate about something. Look at it. Sean is in his truck. Our buddy Sean is in his truck, all right, listening to the show on a phone because we're not available on XM yet. And he has decided that he wants to get involved in the camera obscura issue. Sean, what's up?
Hey, man, it's just tracing.
Is it tracing?
Tracing.
All right, okay.
It's like they put the image up on there, and it's same deal, basically,
So they are working from a reproduction, then?
Oh.
Yeah. that.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Thank you very much. Go back to your tribing.
Have you ever seen a real camera obscura?
I think I hung up on him. Now he's going to have to call back.
You've never seen a real camera obscura. You would know that the image that's projected on the wall is like, 2 inches by 2 inches. You cannot, it is so small and so dim, you cannot accurately
make
a painting copy from it.
You can only
use it as a reference.
That's not true. I've been inside a camera obscura. Have you ever been to the bathhouse in San Francisco?
Man, you were tripping.
No. Go to the bathhouse in San Francisco, all right? If you go to the bathhouse in San Francisco,
the Sutro baths?
Yeah, not the bathhouse. The bath, the thing that's on the coast?
They have the old
what's it called? It's called the bathhouse, isn't it? Or the sea house or whatever?
Yeah, the Sutro baths.
Right. Well, they have a giant camera obscura, which is literally a camera box that you can stand in.
But they did not have that back in the 17th century.
Okay, folks. We'll be right back. But first, we've got a word from our sponsors. And look, I got to be honest with you. I got to get this off my chest on top of everything else.
Sorry.
After we talked about last night, the heinous business practices of Coca-Cola and Company with their carbonated benzene, I was pretty shocked to see this on our commercial log today. All right. We picked up a new sponsor, and it's Tab. Yeah, Tab. And this just goes with the territory of commercial radio, folks. But I just have to say that we do not personally endorse Tab on the show. We don't agree with these business practices. And if this gets me into trouble saying what I'm saying right now, so be it. But I just want to make it clear, my friends, that we don't have anything to do with Tab on the Mark Maron Show. Okay? We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Earle, Tab drinker. You know, when Coca-Cola first introduced Tab back in 1963, I knew I'd finally found a love more powerful than my sick desire to stalk the Beatles. Weighing in at just 0 calories, 31 milligrams of caffeine, and 12 ounces of cancer, it's a value that cannot be beat. Not to mention that great metallic aftertaste. So if you're tired of the same old boring bourbon and Fresca, I've got a big ball of saccharin growing in my liver that says, go for it! Tab. It's not just for breakfast anymore. In the little pink can.
What the hell was that, Jim?
I've gotten two parking tickets in the last week. I got to make some money, $40 a piece. It's hard.
Oh, it's benzene with bubbles, Jim.
Well, to each his own.
In a minute, we're going to be talking to the Big Buy guys, the guys who made the film The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. But right now, Jim Earle is going to play us out with a song.
Listen on a Monday and a Tuesday too. Moron, Ron, 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 Moron, Ron, Ron. Wednesday and a Thursday and a Friday too. Moron, Ron, 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 Moron, Ron, Ron. Yeah, he has 4 cats. Yeah, they ruined his pants. Yeah, he smells like pee. Moron, Ron, 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 Moron, Ron, Ron.
I don't know if I like that one.
Have you ever smuggled drugs in your puppy's stomach? Well, neither has Mark Maron. Learn more about it at markmaron.com. I've heard it's more popular than Google. And now he eliminates the middleman, Mark Maron.
That's right. What the hell is this? What the hell is this, Jim?
What?
Someone said that someone's yelling at me on this damn blog. Stop cutting Jim off. I wasn't cutting you off. Sometimes I just can't wait, Jim. I just can't wait.
You're a very frenetic person. You cannot be stifled.
Hey, dude, if I could just find out what the hell I'm doing here. I know exactly what I'm doing, but sometimes I lose my intros to things. And today, we award every day we have our Dick of the Day for somebody who honors the reactive thinking of Dick Cheney or either reflexively or not. So let's do today's Dick of the Day. During an investigation into a currency smuggling operation, U.S. customs agents came upon something suspicious. Their search led them to an apartment in West Hollywood where they found 250 yellowing and wrinkled counterfeit billion-dollar bills. The bills had an issue date of 1934 and a picture of Grover Cleveland on them. I think it's important to mention here that there is no such thing as a billion-dollar bill. And if there was, what were they thinking? They could just break it if they bought some gum at a 7-Eleven? The man responsible for the phony bills is Tekla Zigeta, who, for being ambitious to the point of ridiculousness and overreaching to the point of being busted, two fine Republican traits, makes him our Dick of the Day. Now, I'd like to do a special Dick mention, if I could. Goes out to the Secret Service agent involved in cracking the case for being the dope who was quoted as saying, quote, "You would think the $1 billion denomination would be a giveaway that these notes are fake, but some people are still taken in," end quote. Yeah? Like who? Hey, let's see. That's $1.79 for the chips and $1 for the soda there. That's $2.29 with tax. All you guys, that $1 billion bill? Yeah, you don't have anything smaller there? All right, okie dokie. Looks real to me. So how do you want your change? Is singles okay, you moron? All right. So there you go. Okay, let me do this real quick, I think. Hey, what's up, Julian in Atlanta? You got a question for me?
Maestro, of course, see.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
You know, I need to ask you. You know, I mean, you've been dealing with the situation with Mishnah and the gun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've got this situation that's similar to yours. You know, I've got this. I'm getting married this weekend to a woman I've been involved with for 6 years now. And we've been through the whatnot.
Yeah.
And you know, we've had hostility.
Yeah.
But you know, we're sealing the deal.
Okay.
And so I need to ask you, like, how do you deal with those Quentin Tarantino situations at the end of the night?
Well, you got to ask yourself. If you want my honest opinion, you really have to ask yourself. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to figure out what the hell you're yelling at them for. I know that sounds weird, but sometimes if you're like me, you just get all worked up and you just like to fight and you're not doing anything but getting them more upset because you just want closure. You just want to make them upset and then you end up apologizing. It's this weird cycle. I don't know why you do it, but I as I've said before, 99% of the time, if you're yelling at a woman, all you should be really saying is, "Why can't you be my mommy? Why?"
Yeah.
So I
respect the fact that you contact both Plato and Freud when you talk about, you know, you need your mommy at that point, and you say, you know, philosopher kings, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, being the philosopher king, do hold forth. What is love?
Yeah, okay.
I want to know, man, and it'll learn me for this weekend.
Here's what I say. Love.
You know, I want to hold forth for your philosopher dictators, you know, and let it go.
Love is need all dolled up. But look, dude, you know, congratulations on the marriage. And look, if you really love her, that's going to sustain you for a long time. And I wish you the best of luck, Julian.
Thanks, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Mark, if I may quote from Batman, who said, "What is love?"
Yeah.
Four letter word. Yesterday's laughter, tomorrow's tears.
Yeah. That's something, Jim. That really is, man. I got to process that. I wonder if my wife's listening. I wonder how she did down at the Brea Improv. Why don't you call me, baby? 877-520-1150. Any number of babies can call me. It's 58 past the hour.
Live from Burbank, California, home to 4,000 tons of recyclables a month, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he was thought to have disappeared 11 million years ago. Mark Maron.
Would you stumble on that one a little,
yeah,
Jim?
Yeah, I stumbled on both of those.
Six past the hour. How you doing, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor? How are you lurking conservatives? How are you people? And on what side of the camera obscura argument are you? And also, of course, did you go to see Gustave Courbet's The Source, The Origin of Life, the Origin of the World, 1866 painting? And also, we were told by gentle giant Paul Asplund, our phone answerer, he said that Courbet was a social activist who was kicked out of France, apparently. I got vague information of this, but this just, it brings it full circle when we're talking about the important issue of whether or not the camera obscura influenced Flemish painting or whether it did not. Some good news right off the bat, if I could just give you this before I bring our guests on. Bush's approval rating is hovering around 33%, according to a recent Pew poll. Thank God for that. And thanks for the port security fiasco. That makes Bush's approval rating on handling of terrorism is around 42%, which is still too high, but it is 20 points below what he came into this term with. 58% of the people polled said the Congress's opposition of the port deal, yet only two Democratic senators signed on to Russ Feingold of Wisconsin's proposal to censure the president. That's heinous. All right, look, folks, I was shocked last week when Tom DeLay won the primary election for his congressional seat, but some people are saying that it's the best thing that could happen. They say that Democrats have a better chance of beating Tom DeLay than they do if it was another Republican, then it would be more difficult to beat them. But because it's Tom and he's such a heinous bastard, the bug-killing dwarf king of the legislative pig pack, who is now the ex-dwarf king, that they have a better shot. And one of the reasons DeLay might be beatable is because people are finally taking notice of his misdeeds. So right now, on the phone, we've got two guys who are shining a light on the Hammer in their new documentary, The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. Here's a clip from the trailer right now. Perhaps not. Why don't we, maybe we'll get these.
By the time we finish this poker game, there may not be a federal government left, which would suit me just fine. I would like to eliminate the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, HUD, the National Endowment for the Arts. We ought to zero them out. The National Endowment for the Humanities. We ought to zero them out. We're going to completely redesign our government.
Tom DeLay is astonishing.
I like him, and plus, when he's over there, we get our votes through the House.
He needed the House of Representatives to redistrict the state of Texas.
This is not about Democrats and Republicans. This is about cops and officers.
Now, these guys, the movie is called, it's called The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. Mark Birnbaum and Jim Schermbeck are in Austin, Texas for the South by Southwest Film Festival. Thanks for staying up late, guys. You guys at a party or anything?
Good morning, Mark. No, we're not in Austin and we're not at a party. Jim's in Lubbock and I'm in Dallas.
Are you just avoiding Austin? You like don't want to go anywhere near Austin? So,
well, it's a good place to visit, but,
Yeah,
we have spent a lot of time there over the last couple of years.
It's a great town. I've always had a good time there. I've had barbecue there that's really good once. So let's talk about the movie.
Well,
so,
didn't those shots of downtown Houston look great on the radio?
Oh, they were tremendous. Very evocative, and we got the vibe. We definitely got the feeling of the ominous representation of Houston there. So where do you begin with DeLay's career? Do you begin with him as an exterminator?
No, not really. Because our story centers on what he did as his power as majority leader, it really doesn't. We kind of look at his early career in the state legislature, where he was known as Hot Tub Tom, and lived with our present governor in a house called Macho Manor, and was kind of a backbencher, and then all of a sudden went to D.C. and acquired quite a bit of power because he figured out how to run the cash game in Washington.
Right, and he helped unseat Newt Gingrich, yes?
Yeah. He was part of that rebellion, actually, yeah.
He was part of the mutiny.
After coming in with that initial wave in 1994-95 as part of that Republican Revolution, absolutely, yeah.
But he was a bug killer, right? He was an exterminator. He had an exterminating business, didn't he?
He was, and that's really what got him, I think, interested in government. He wanted, he was against the rules that told him what kind of pesticides he could or could not use.
Wow, it's very interesting. So now, okay, how long did you spend on it? Who paid for the film? And, what were the biggest obstacles you came in doing it?
We've been working on the film for almost 3 years. It's been entirely self-financed until just about a month ago.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the rough spots in making the film for you guys?
One of the hardest parts about it was that it was a developing story. It was a breaking story, and it's been hard to say when we should stop and say this is a film.
Right. Well, you can always add things onto it.
Yeah.
You can have like a kind of like appendixes and say like, here's part two, the sequel.
It's actually true now that we don't have to actually strike a film print to put a show into theaters. It's really a tape now, and it's true. We could kind of update it and offer new versions as the trial unfolds this summer in Austin or wherever they have it.
Oh, you know what, man? You should set up a website, and then as each thing unfolds, just make it available to special people.
We've got a great website. It's TomDeLayMovie.com.
Oh, excellent. Because, you know, he's going to jail, so then you got the whole jail story.
Well,
do you think he's going to go to jail? Come on, be honest, fellas.
You know, I don't know. We could talk a little bit about that case that Ronnie Earls got, and
We'll talk about it. He's not going to avoid. He's still up on the money laundering charges are sticking, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And the conspiracy charge we should be hearing about toward the end of this month. The Court of Appeals down here in Texas is supposed to be ruling on that. And, of course, there's always that other scandal in Washington, D.C. that could draw him in.
So, Abramoff?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to suck down a lot of members of Congress. I mean, I think it's only a matter of time before they're all connected to that guy.
We found a clip of film of Mr. Abramoff introducing Tom DeLay, who Tom says, I think he doesn't know Jack at all, but he's introducing Tom DeLay at, what was the year, Jim?
2003, National Young Republicans Convention.
College Republicans Convention, and Jack Abramoff is introducing Tom, and he says to the audience, thank God for Tom DeLay. No one has risen as high, no conservative has risen as high as Tom DeLay has. Thank God he's the majority leader. And then he turns to the audience, and just as he's finishing the introduction, he says, Tom DeLay is who we all want to be when we grow up.
Wow. I thought it was so funny because he said right then, and he turned to the audience, and he gave him a big kiss on the mouth. I was hoping that was you were going to say that. But
well, they do hug.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
they embrace.
Now, tell me a little bit about what you learned in terms of how Tom DeLay controlled the Congress. Where did he get the name The Hammer? Is it true that he had dirt on people and that people were literally afraid of him?
Oh, I don't think it's so much that. He went to Washington and figured out that the key to power is cash. And he went out, for instance, in 1994, during that whole election cycle, went out to like 70 or 90 different congressional districts campaigning for other folks and raising money for them.
All over the country.
And so they were beholden to him once the Republicans took the majority in January 1995, and that's how he made it into the leadership position as the whip to begin with under Newt Gingrich. He came in on that wave, and he figured out that it was all about money. And to squeeze more money and to squeeze more deal-making out of it, he actually told people on K Street who had hired, you know, roughly 50% Democrats and roughly 50% Republicans as lobbyists that you had from now on, because Republicans control both houses, you had to hire Republican lobbyists. And, of course, that gave them all kinds of avenues to funnel more money. And there's just a lot of cross-pollination then that begins to happen between members of Congress and the private sector and lobbying firms and so on.
So he was the gateway to selling out the Congress to lobbyists.
Well, he certainly elevated it to a whole new level, as Molly Ivins likes to point out in our movie. He just nobody had thought about this stuff in the way that he did before he came along.
Did you guys talk to Jim Moore?
Don't think we did.
Uh-huh.
I don't think so.
How many other people, like who are some of the people that appear in your film commenting on it?
Jim Hightower, Paul Burka, who's the senior executive editor at Texas Monthly Magazine, a number of Democrat and Republican state representatives, of course, Ronnie Earle and some people on his staff.
He's the guy prosecuting him, yeah?
That's right. He's the district attorney of Travis County.
Now, attorneys from the other side as well.
Oh, that's good. You kind of balance it out a little bit. Now, what do you think his odds are in his district? Do you think that he is beatable?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
I think he's facing the fight of his life right now, although they have a very sophisticated ground operation going on to identify their voters. They're being very precise about it, and the Democrats are going to have to use their money very wisely if they're going to beat him. You can never count this guy out.
Wow, boy. Democrats using money wisely. Well, I hope that happens. I really do. I hope that they do mobilize in the right direction to make that happen. I'd love to see him taken down. So how are people going to be able to see this movie?
Well, they can start by going to the website, TomDeLayMovie.com.
Yep.
And there's going to be a lot of information there about where the film is going to be made available. Of course, we're distributing the film through Brave New Films. That's Robert Greenwald's.
Oh, that's great. That's great. We've talked to him before.
Yeah, the Walmart movie and Outfoxed. We thought that was just a perfect model for this film. So, you know, they've got a great connection to grassroots all across the country. So there's going to be house parties.
Right.
Anybody interested in organizing one, just go to TomDeLayMovie.com, and then you can get the information there to do that. The DVDs are already for order at the website.
Oh, that's great. So this is like a great learning tool for people.
We hope so. And there'll be theatrical showings around the country. We're going to open it May 5th in Houston, Mr. DeLay's backyard.
Oh, that's terrific. You guys are part of this this whole new wave of accessible documentary filmmaking that is really seeking to educate people and raise political consciousness in this country, and I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, it's kind of a sea change in how things get out into the marketplace.
Yeah. It's great, and I wish you the best of luck with the film. Mark Birnbaum, Jim Schoenbeck, thanks for joining us here.
You're welcome.
Thank y'all.
Okay, you take care. The name of the film is The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. You can go to that website that they mentioned. We'll put a link to that website at markmaron.com, MarcMaron. The number, the name of the website that they put up is TomDeLayMovie.com. You can get a copy of that. You can have a party with the movie. I really love the way this works now, because Greenwald stuff is like they got a turnaround now. It took these guys a long time to make this movie, but documentaries are put together so quickly and so efficiently that you can get a turnaround within a year to get that movie out and to get people seeing it and to get people educated and get their consciousness heightened. Just by these type of filmmakers, and I think it's a great thing. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to we have our police officer guest, which I'm looking forward to. Joe Broadhurst, a decorated police officer here in Los Angeles, is going to share some poems with us. So stick around for that. It's 20 past. It's 877-520-1150. Progressive Talk, AM 1150.
And now he's blocking the 605 North. Mark Maron.
That's right, 23 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. I am Mark Maron. Gustave Courbet was a social activist who supported the poor and oppressed, and he runs afoul of shifting French politics. This is from a blog from Artie Farty. Near the end of his life in the 1870s, he is jailed briefly for his association with the Paris Commune, a failed revolutionary movement. The French government imposes exorbitant fines on Courbet, and rather than face bankruptcy, he flees to self-imposed exile in Switzerland. Thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. Now I'm going to go back to the painting. The painting is The Origin of the World. Just tremendous. And he did a lot of painting. He did one of fish. He did one of other women. This guy was a tremendous painter. What are you laughing at, Jim?
No, nothing.
Yeah.
You're just obsessed with that one painting. And I think it's just the porn angle.
No, it's not. It's the title. The origin of the world.
Yeah, it's clever.
That's deep. It's clever.
Did he
good joke.
Name it that way, or did somebody else name it that way?
He wasn't retarded.
Well, a lot of paintings are titled by other people who didn't have anything to do with the picture.
I think he named it that. Can we get to our guest? We're not really arguing, people. Don't get upset. I hate it when the mommy and daddy fight. All right, look, this is an interesting guest, and I've heard about him. Certainly in L.A., people have heard about him. It's a rare thing where you have an officer, an active duty police officer who does something different. He does something that reaches out to the community. Joe Broadhurst is a decorated officer here in Los Angeles, and he is a poet. And so what rank are you? How does that work, officer?
I'm a sergeant, Mark, and just let me say it's great to be here. I'm really excited about doing this, and you too, Berkeley, whatever's going on.
Yeah, you were listening on the way in that Jim goes to Berkeley.
Yeah. Berkeley?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I heard.
Is that a crack?
What? So you're asking the questions now? This is how this is going to work?
Berkeley crack? Is that it?
No, I couldn't remember your name.
Can we have a little respect here, Jim?
Can we have a little
respect for the fuzz?
Go ahead.
So what made you become a poet, Officer Broadhurst?
Well, Mark, that's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had a way of, how can I say this, a flair with words.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And, being a cop, you really have to communicate with people. You do, It's like you're writing reports.
Uh-huh.
You're out on the street. You got to communicate. And like poetry, you don't have a lot of time to, just kind of rattle on and repeat yourself and just say the same. You got to get to the point. You get in, you get out.
I get it. Yeah.
You shave away the extra. And that's what you say. You don't say, hey, you over there, whatever you're doing, knock it off, or maybe I'll have to take the safety off and pull the trigger and discharge my weapon.
Right.
You can't say that.
No, you can't.
You gotta say stop or I'll shoot.
That's a lot like poetry.
Exactly.
And it's got that phrasing. So how else is being a poet like being a cop?
Well, I go to a lot of poetry readings, and they're a lot like being a cop.
Uh-huh.
A lot of boredom. A lot of tedium.
Yeah.
Over and over, yeah. One thing after another, uh-huh. Then bam, it's your time to go up, and it's really terrifying.
Right, so you want to get into the poems? We got a couple minutes here on okay. This side of the break. Read us the shortest one you got.
I got the shortest one I got. Just right. Give me a signal.
Go.
This one's called I'm a Good Cop. I'm a good cop. 17 years on the force, and this is the thanks I get. I'm a good cop. I'm a good cop. You were my partner. You were supposed to look out for me. Rodriguez wasn't going to testify. He already had a deal. I'm a good cop. I'm a good cop. You can't prove nothing. Okay, there were a few free meals that weekend broker, but who are you going to believe? I'm a good cop. I'm a good cop. 17 years. This is my family we're talking about. She was my wife. I'm a good cop. I'm a good cop. You can take my badge. You can take my gun. But you can't take this. I'm a good cop. Thank you.
That was powerful.
How come I'm the only one clapping here? A little respect for the officer. Unbelievable. I appreciate being here, Officer Broadhurst, and we'll do one more poem in a second, so stick around for that. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150, 29 past the hour.
And now Curry goes right through him. Mark Maron.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, you're welcome, man.
It doesn't go right through me. I have a pretty tough gut, but I appreciate the input and what you're doing here with me here, Jim. 35 past the hour, you're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. They're blogging at markmaron.com, MARCMARON. You can call me. Right now you can call me. 877-520-1150. We're talking to Police Sergeant Joe Broadhurst. Decorated officer of the law here in Los Angeles, also a poet, did one of his poems before the break. We're happy he's here. He's been on the force 17 years, and he was inspired later in life to take up poetry after going to some poetry readings and finding that he could do better. Is that basically what you're telling
me? That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, so now you've got another poem. What is there in title of this poem?
The poem is called Web, and it's named after the man who... taught me how to express myself emotionally, Jack Webb. And
let's hear it.
Just take it from there.
Yeah.
What moves a man like Jack Webb, actor, author, producer, patriot, thespian, raconteur? What moves a man like Jack Webb? What animates those limbs? Moves that face, God, that face, staring at you like a big slab of granite. That ain't moving. What moves a man like Jack Webb? What? Who? Was it the big one? Or was it Korea? Was it your mother, Jack? Or was it your father, Mr. Webb? What moves a man like Jack Webb? You know, he was giving the business to Julie London back in the Crimea River days, way before emergency. Talk about mink. What moves a man like Jack Webb? The facts. Jack, the facts. Thank you.
See, I don't want to be the only one clapping. That's tremendous, man. That is tremendous.
Thank you very much.
I mean, you've probably seen a lot as a cop. And what do you got, one more poem? Because I was going to talk about
really?
Monkeys.
You can talk about monkeys?
You got one more if you don't.
Well, I got some titles here. Let's do, let's do this one. I don't want to get controversial because I didn't come here to talk about, I'm just talking about what my life is like. And,
All right.
This one's called, About a new kind of cop we got
this
now.
Is, let me just introduce you again so people know what they're listening to. This is Sergeant Joe Broadhurst of the LAPD, officer of the law, and clearly an accomplished poet.
Thank you very much.
What do you got?
This is called Pansy Cop. Pansy Cop, you think you're so special with your lattes and your biker shorts. You didn't learn that at the academy, Pansy Cop. Pansy Cop, you can't hide your superior attitude, not with your green tea and your sensitivity training. If I tried that crap when I was coming up, they would have put me in a dress, Pansy Cop. Pansy Cop, look, this is a stakeout, not a slumber party. What is that? I like this smell. Knock it off or I'll bust you down. And you're going to need a lot more than aromatherapy to get you out of that jam, Pansy Cop. Pansy Cop. It's just, you know, times change. Look, I don't want to exfoliate. Look, if this is going to work out. Now, come on, don't say partner like that. If this is going to work out, you're going to have to remember one thing. Oh, you might be a pansy, but you're still a cop. Pansy Cop. Thank you.
Tremendous. Really appreciate you coming down, Joe Broadhurst. I'd like to have you on the show again sometime.
I'd love it.
All right. All right. What were you going to say?
I'd love to do it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming down. Don't hurt anybody. Jim's got a couple of parking tickets. You might want to talk to him about that in a minute. What I like to talk about, while I got a few minutes, is an important political issue. A coalition of primatologists, attorneys, scientists, and actors are calling for an end to the use of apes in the movies. This isn't BS. This is real. The name of the campaign is No Real Apes, R-E-E-L, Real Apes. The issues are that they have is because of the psychological harm that comes from separating the apes from their mothers, heinous living conditions, and abusive trainers. Now, apparently, this is true. There is only one agency that oversees the treatment of animals in movies. It's the American Humane Association. They will not sign on to the campaign. They're the ones, basically, that allow a film to carry the disclaimer, no animals were harmed during this filming of this movie. That's about all they can do, though, apparently. They receive about $1.5 million a year from the film industry, which would seem like a conflict of interest. They cannot investigate or reprimand trainers or productions that mistreat animals. All they can do is deny the film the disclaimer. Now, apparently, they are very strict. They denied the 40-year-old virgin the disclaimer because a tropical fish died in a tank on set when some guy turned off the filter. All right? That's for real. Now, the No Real Apes folks say that retirement is a real problem for these apes, okay? They work 1, maybe 2 years, and they can live until they're 60. They say that most Hollywood apes end up in roadside zoos or dirty facilities for up to 50 years. Now, I just want you to know, this is just a heads up. If you're driving down, you know, the highway and you see those signs that say live monkeys or zoo, you know, that those big middle-of-the-nowhere rest stops. I've been to those things. Sometimes they have freak shows. And you pay a buck to see a sad ape in a cage, all right? If it's an orangutan and he's making sad, howling noises, like, you know, whoo, 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 he could be saying, I work with Clint Eastwood. Do you understand? There's a sadness there to these bitter apes. All right, they should set up a rest home for Hollywood monkey actors, and I believe this is true. I know that there's plenty of orangutans. There's at least 2 orangutans that they claim they work with Clint Eastwood. There are several chimps that know Matthew Broderick. But they might just end up annoying the other monkeys who are bit players. Can you imagine the bitterness in the ape community, Jim? Can you imagine that? The amount of bitterness there is in the comic community? Can you imagine some apes that had bigger plans, that bigger ideas for themselves? Can you imagine the apes that only made print campaigns where they just had pictures of them smoking and now they got emphysema, maybe one lung?
Well, do you think they bite us on the stomach all the time?
Yeah. I never thought of it like that.
Monkeys are biting people on the stomach left and right. It's very painful. Have you ever been bitten on the stomach by a monkey?
Jim, what the hell are you talking about?
That's when they attack, they bite you on the stomach.
Uh-huh. Okay, Jim. That's good.
They bite off your nose, your genitals, your ears.
Now, what are you, accosting apes somewhere? What the hell are you doing?
I'm just, you know, just telling it like it is.
What's that, Chase? No. I mean, it's just interesting that, you know, we go right from that. You know, apparently many... I just I feel bad for the monkeys. I can't even condescend to this story. This is a real story. This is a real concern.
It's a horrible thing.
And the sad thing is that many apes who wanted to go further in the business, you know, if they did have a rest home, they'd be complaining about animation taking away a lot of the jobs. There's just not as much work for apes anymore in the movies because they can just make them up. They can just make them out of that special supercomputer animation now. It's bad enough out here in L.A. to see all these loser human actors who are being mistreated and abused. You know? I mean, the only difference is that it's a choice on their part, but these apes can't make a choice. I say they shouldn't put them in movies. They should leave them alone. You know, take care of the animals. You know, I do. I think that's my basic message. Man.
Well, that's a very powerful message.
Oh, you guys stink.
Pansy cop.
Here we go. Listen to this. This is right up your alley, Jim. According to the Office of Atmospheric Research at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, dig that, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere hit a record 381 parts per million in 2005. That is up from 2.6 parts per million, Jim. Carbon dioxide, as you know, is one of the biggest greenhouse gases there is. Primary cause of carbon dioxide is?
Meat.
No, that's methane, I thought.
Yeah, you know.
Industry, automobiles. Obviously, the Bush administration will dismiss this as a study as nonsense. It's just a natural course of events. One of the scariest things I read in this study, and this is real deal, is that the scientists are trying to figure out what happens to heat and energy that are generated by these trapped gases and whether or not they are changing the surface temperature of the ocean, which would be a primary cause of the increase in severity and the frequency of storms like Katrina.
And when you cut down the rainforest to produce meat, you also screw with that whole process.
That's the
well.
Methane thing. That's the constant farting of the cows.
Yeah, but
taking us down.
But you're also, you know, cheap grazing land. You're cutting down millions of acres of rainforest around the world for that, and you are screwing with the world's weather patterns in the process.
Earth, you are destroying the Earth's lungs. That's what the rainforests are. Say it, you hippie. The Earth's lungs.
Lungs.
I'm not condescending. I'm not making fun of you. I'm talking to you about an issue that's important to you. Why are you so defensive tonight?
I'm not defensive.
Why are you cranky?
I'm not cranky.
All right.
You ever been bitten on the stomach by a monkey?
No, but I'm looking forward to it. Apparently that happens a lot.
It does.
A lot.
Extremely painful.
Do you think Gustave Courbet was ever bitten on the stomach by a monkey? Do you think that may have inspired him to write to paint a different picture instead of the origin of everything? That he would do a monkey painting in the same pose? You think that would be attractive, Jim?
I think he did do a monkey painting in the same pose. You just, you know, you don't know your Courbet oeuvre.
Did we resolve the camera obscura problem? These are issues that we've been talking about tonight, people. These are issues that we have been talking about. Claude Allen. Did you read that story?
No.
That was genius. This guy is the epitome of what a conservative really is. Claude Allen, a former Bush advisor on domestic policy, has been charged with serial fraud for scamming Target stores on more than 25 occasions.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, he resigned his post last week. He was a domestic advisor to Bush. He cited that he wanted to spend more time with the wife and kids, which, as we know, means I've done something wrong or I could be implicated in something wrong, so I must leave before I'm forced out or get my stink on the rest of the team. So this guy did something wrong, and he did it over and over and over again. And before we get into the crime itself, let's take a look at who this guy is. Claude Allen, last year, he became the highest-ranking African-American to serve in the West Wing, in the executive branch there. Uncle Tom issues aside, in a lot of ways, Claude Allen is a great example of who conservatives are in terms of hypocrisy. This guy was raised in a Democratic home in a poor neighborhood. He went to college, became a born-again Christian and a Republican. Started out in the Department of Health and Human Services. He was nominated to be a federal appeals court judge, but it was blocked. He supported the amending of the Constitution to ban gay marriage. He supported the right of Christian military chaplains to mention Jesus in prayers at publicly funded institutions. He helped George Bush craft his last State of the Union address. He sat next to the First Lady during the address. He moved his family into a house further from his job at the White House so he could be closer to their church. And apparently, any chance he could, he was going to Target stores, buying a bunch of merchandise, taking the merchandise out to his car, going back into the store, picking out the same merchandise, bringing it to the returns counter with the receipt for the stuff he had in the car, and getting a refund. More than 25 times, this guy was addicted to this. Pretty ingenious. If it were policy, it would be celebrated by Republicans who love getting paid for services and stuff they don't provide as long as it's with our money, taxpayer money. So in some ways, this guy should have been a dick of the day. Because he was reflexively, unconsciously, in his pathology, in his weird addiction to doing this crime, was acting out Republican policy exactly as it is as it appears in the brain there. Sure, we'll give them the celebratory dick of the day noise.
That's what coke fiends do. They do that receipt bit.
They do?
Yeah.
I never did that. I was a coke fiend.
Well, you know.
Do you know anybody, officer, that's ever done that?
Well, in my work, yes, I did. I can't talk about it at any length.
I'm glad you're still hanging out here. You can take your hat off, by the way, and put the billy club down. Well, Jim's okay.
I think we got off on the wrong foot there, Jim. I'm sorry.
Holy mackerel, we're driving the show into a ditch here.
I believe in free speech, just like the next guy.
Sure. Hey, we're going to have the short order news in just a second, and I'm going to look at Jim's stomach for a scar from a monkey bite, you freak. It's 49 past the hour.
Very painful. Depressed because you haven't heard anything funny yet? Well, me too. Well, all that's about to change, maybe, because Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next. And now he's been nominated for 3 awards. Yeah. Mark Maron.
That's right. 3 awards. I don't know what they are, but thank you very much, Jim. I want to thank the people who have been on the show this evening. We had the filmmakers from The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. That was great. Nice talking to them. We had a host of Poppin' Politics at the UCB Theater over there on Franklin Avenue, Jimmy Dore, to talk about some news. You had Officer Broadhurst, who was here. Mort Mortensen was here. Tomorrow we've got Lori David, that's the wife of Larry David, and one of the few people in the country trying to do something about global warming. I'm sure she'll know about that study I read about today,
the increase in
carbon dioxide.
That study's been going on for the last 3-4 years. Every month there's another study like that.
Why are you trivializing it?
I'm not trivializing it.
It sounded like you were trivializing it to me.
I'm just saying another one comes out every year or every 3 months.
But 3 months is not a year, and this was for 2005. And it was a very specific study from a very important company with a lot of names, the Atmospheric Research at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This is not...
The point is, it's just confirming something scientists have said and known for the last 30 years.
All right, so I'm not supposed to talk about it then?
No, you can talk all you want about it. Why don't you talk about the monkeys biting people on the stomach?
You brought that up.
You're afraid, aren't you?
Oh, come on.
You're afraid to speak the truth about the monkeys.
At least some blogger sent me a picture of a monkey taking care of cats. Maybe you should go to markmaron.com and link on this link. It's the cutest thing. There's a monkey in Honduras who cares for a brood of 9 cats, and it looks just like my cat, which means I'm sort of like that monkey. And we are all kind of like monkeys. See how it comes full circle? The origin, man. Gustave Courbet, the origin of the world. All right? That's what we're all coming back to. Full circle, my friends. Jerry Stahl will be here tomorrow, my buddy Jerry Stahl, permanent midnight author, and he's a writer for CSI. We're going to talk about the cultural phenomenon of forensic investigation shows. You going to be part of that, Jim?
I'll be here.
Lawton Smalls. We're going to call Lawton Smalls. Haven't talked to him in about a week. We're going to do that.
That guy's nuts.
I'm going to have to deal with my weird guilt of hiring someone to clean my house. Maybe I'll talk about that. It was weird.
Look, as long as it goes to your wife, that's fine. You know, she works hard for it.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron Short Order News. After more political outbursts by Saddam Hussein during today's testimony, the judge presiding over the ex-dictator's trial has closed the courtroom to the public and the media. A chief judge, Rauf Abdel Rahman, said, quote, Saddam makes great political points about legalized marijuana and the greenification, and I totally recommend his blog, but this is a criminal trial, end quote. Documents confirm that the Bush administration has rewritten security clearance rules to make it more difficult for gays and lesbians to receive clearances. Activists point to one section in particular that states, quote, clearance shall be given to Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, end quote. I can't tell you what gays and lesbians have to do to get clearance, but let's just say Jeff Gannon didn't get his press pass for his writing. You know what I mean, huh? Didn't get it for his writing. Wink, wink, nudge. Man. A Japanese research team has created a robot that will help care for the country's growing number of elderly. But sadly, it cannot feel love. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. I'm going to the source. Gustave Courbet's Origin of the World. All right, that's it. That's where I'm going. As I said, tomorrow we got Lori David, we got Jerry Stahl, Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. And I can't wait to be here tomorrow. Do we have a Clippers game? No, Friday we do. And we don't know where that's going to go. We did an extra, half hour today. That was nice, if people caught that pre-show. Excellent. Didn't you have a good time, Jim?
It was jam-packed full of content.
I got to eat something, man. I think I'm about to pass out. Good night, sheeple.